Good evening and welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot. I'm Paul Mears and alongside me, of course, Curtis Hines. And coming up on this evening's edition, the countdown is on to the BFA elections. Barney Callender, he says he's confident of beating Al Walcott and becoming the next senior vice president. The Nick Maitland and coach Dexter Marshall will be in to discuss the way forward for local football. Then we stop in Trinidad with veteran journalist Fazir Mohammed for the latest on the football crisis. And the analyst Kenneth Onyekwe, along with Nick Maitland, look back at a dramatic final day of the English Premier League season. This is the Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. And welcome back to the program. Good evening to you, Curtis.
Well, good evening to you, Paul. Good evening to all of our listeners to the Penalty Spot. Of course, you can reach us 18sports246 gmail.com or feeling that 4341790. It's been another dramatic week in football, as Paul would have mentioned. The very latest developments ahead of the BFA election. The English League has been decided, no surprise there. You just needed to see who would finish third and fourth, of course. Also this week, Juventus wrapping up the title in Italy. More on that to come a bit later in the program.
Yeah, those teams, Curtis, that demoted and those promoted also seem to have taken major significance on the final day. So glad to see Villa stayed up.
Yeah, Aston Villa.
Sure we're going to get it.
Yeah, Villa and West Ham, two popular choices to stay up. Norwich going down and third, fourth, and fifth in order of appearance. Man United by goal difference over Chelsea, and Leicester City in fifth place. And in January, I would have given you good money if you told me United would be third, more money for Chelsea fourth, and that they would push out Leicester City into fifth position. I did not see that coming till way into the season. Anyone who tells you differently is a stranger to the truth. Man United at one point were in double digits, 10th and 11th, struggling badly. Chelsea not expected to do that well. No transfer budget. Brand new manager and tested in Frank Lampard. They did very well as well. And I think honorary mention, Paul, to Spurs manager Jose Mourinho. Not everyone's cup of tea, but he got the job. Club in 14th position, and he got them up to 6th, I believe, and did pretty well, all things considered.
I can see, Curtis, you're chomping at the bit to get to that discussion. But maybe Kenneth is also in early.
Yeah, just setting the scene,
Still celebrating, Kenneth?
In his Liverpool raid, yeah.
I mean, good evening, listeners. I mean, you know, we're going to be celebrating until the Premier League is decided next year, whenever that's decided. We're the current English champions, and we're the current world champions, and we're the current European champions. There's so much to celebrate. So much.
I'm sure we're going to get there shortly. But before we do that, we're going to come back home. And, of course, one of the big things happening in local football over the next week or two will be the Barbados Football Association elections, and where some of the posts will be up for grabs. And one of them is that of the senior vice president, Barney Callender, who will be challenging the current hold of that post, Al Walcott. We're going to hear from Al during our show next week. But today, we're going to hear the views of Barney Callender and how he expects, if he is elected, to take football forward.
Let's start with news of the BFA elections on August 9th. We have been joined by Barney Callender, who is challenging for the post of senior vice president held by Captain Al Walcott.
My first question to you would be, why would you be running for that particular post at this stage?
Okay, well, thanks for having me. First, I have been around sports administration, especially football, for over 35 years. And I want to make a greater impact on the development of football in Barbados. That's just one area. Two, there are always work to be done, especially the areas of youth football and women's football. And I want to be one of the persons leading these projects. My knowledge and experience that I have acquired over the years, I want to give the president a stronger support as a vice president. Presently, the president is the president of CFU and vice president of CONCACAF. And I want to take some of that responsibility of the BFA. I think I'm capable. I don't even want to mention qualify, but I think that I can take on some of the responsibility of the BFA. And next, I have a vision for football. And this vision comprises of two things. I want to see a semi-professional football league in Barbados. And I want to be in a position where I can help convince government and the private sector that this is a worldwide venture. And secondly, a part of that vision is, I think that Barbados can participate in an under-17 World Cup and a senior women's World Cup. I think that this is within our capacity as a small nation. And I think that we can settle a good plan in place and be successful in participating in on a 17 World Cup and a senior women's World Cup. So these are the areas that I have marked out, and these are the areas that I really want to focus in on as a vice president going forward.
You mentioned, Barney, the fact that the current president, Hans, seems to be pretty full with lots of other areas as the president of CFU and the vice president of CONCACAF. You don't think that support in terms of what is happening locally is coming from the person in the present post that you're challenging for?
I'm not going to say that, but I want to give a stronger support. I think my knowledge and experience is not well used, and I want to be in a higher position where I can give a more tangible support to the president. There's a lot of areas that need to be worked on, and I think that I've been around football, I can assist in a more tangible way.
I want to take you back before we go forward again. You've mentioned once or twice in terms of your experience in administration. Tell me a little bit about it.
Okay, I started with the Christchurch League. I was a member of the Christchurch League executive for a good while. We would have done a lot of work in the Christchurch League. We have been very successful, one of the more successful leagues in Barbados over time. And I have more or less started in that area with the likes of Austin Williams and Mr. Clark. So there is where my foot got wet. Also, outside of football, I sat on the BCL Cricket Board with Owen Estwick. Presently, I am part of I'm the chairman of the National Sports Council on the 13th football cricket tournament. So the administration in sport is there. Presently, I'm the chairman of the referees committee. So there's a lot of knowledge that I've acquired over the years in terms of sports administration.
You seem to have a big ambition. I'm reading that your dream is to at some stage become the president of the Football Association.
Yeah, that's my ambition. When Mr. Harris decided that he can take it no more, or he has done a lot, and he probably wants to hang out his boots, I want to offer myself to take on the good work that he has done.
What is your view, Barney? I'm looking at football in Barbados now in 2020. You've been around it for a while. What is your view on the state of the game now?
The state of the game is good. We just need some more professionalism in terms of the players. The administration over the last, I would say, 8 years have done a lot. Paul, the way how football has been going in Barbados within the last 10 years is a complete different setup than how it was before. Things are a lot different. Administration, the way how things are done, the structure of the leagues, youth football, women. The state is good. Like anything else, it needs support in terms of government and money. And it's very expensive, to send two teams overseas. It's very expensive. So like any other sport which needs development, funds and finance is very important. But looking at the structure and what we are doing here in Barbados, I think we are an invito to the rest of the Caribbean.
Talk to me a bit about how you see the national teams.
Well, it's difficult to really manage or finance, what is it, about four or five different national teams. We don't have the finance to do it. It's been very difficult. We must have a senior men's team and a women's team. But as I said before, one of the areas that if we work and do a lot of work on our youth programs, these players will eventually feed into our senior program, and it will make a better or make things better for our senior football teams. But as it stands now, our senior teams are doing pretty well. Our senior men teams, our men team is doing very well. The under 17 on two occasions almost went to the World Cup. So it is, you know, the structure is there, but you know, the finance and the know-how in terms of coaches is something that we have to work on.
Let's talk about the clubs, Barney. How can we get the clubs in Barbados to, and I use the term, to come into a more 2020 modern era now?
Yeah, well, Paul, I have been a part of a club, I mean, cricket and football. You see, these clubs need workers, and that's one of the issues that that prevail among these clubs. We need to get people in these clubs that are dedicated and willing to take the work on of these clubs. There's a lot of work to be done, but the personnel is lacking. Facilities is always a challenge for the clubs as well. Most of the clubs do not have the facilities that they wish to have in terms of training and doing other things. So it's always been a challenge for clubs. If they don't have the finance to move forward, and all clubs sometimes, you know, in all the sports can't pay the fees, they cannot pay the officials, you know, they can't pay for the preparation or even simple tasks, Paul, like getting the field prepared. Clubs cannot get that done. So, you know, this is always a problem in terms of able to maintain the structure within the clubs, because there is always a lack of people and dedicated people within the clubs. There's always only two persons who do all the work.
Let's talk about referees. This is an area that you're intimately involved in. What's the state of that? How do you see that area going forward?
Well, refereeing is difficult. It's a very difficult situation, and totally people don't like to be in the middle and being scrutinized and being abused by the public. It's difficult at the moment to get persons to come and do the course, participate, and stay as a referee. Sometimes, Paul, we got persons who would do the course and within a two-year period, they're gone, because it's not easy. But we have put in place a structure for persons who want to do refereeing. And the sky is the limit for refereeing in Barbados. We have persons who have participated in World Cups. And we can do well if we can get persons who can come on board. We always short of referees. One of the things I want to have within our system, if we can have an exchange program with some of the islands where we have some of the referees from different islands coming to Barbados and participate, while some of our referees go to the other islands and participate. And by doing that, they get exposure to different environment, different style of play, and that is in their development, because most of the referees, I believe, who will be coming on board will want to aim to the highest, and that's the FIFA referee. So we have a structure in place, and we hope that we can convince some of our younger referees. We have done a program within the schools, but there's always an issue in terms of persons who actually is playing the game at the moment and also who want to referee. So we must be able to strike a balance, get the persons who want to referee, start early, and get the experience that is needed to go to at least the FIFA standard.
I want to take you back to the elections coming up in a few days' time. Are you confident, Barney, that when you challenge Al Walcott for the post of senior vice president, that you can win it?
Yeah, Paul, I am more than confident. I have, you know, I have been doing a lot of work. I'm confident. You know, this is an election, so you have to be confident. You have to be doing the work, and I hope that you have been able to convince the clubs that, you know, that you can do the job that is required. I would not go into it if I know I can't, and I have a lot of confidence in my ability. I have been encouraged by some of the clubs to put my hat in the ring or my foot into the mud and get involved at a higher level of administration in Barbados.
So you're saying the support has been good?
I've been very, very impressed with the support I have been given within the last 3 years, 3 months that I have been out there in the field working.
Barney Callender, thanks for joining us on Penalty Spot, and all the best in the elections next month.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
That's the voice of Barney Callender, who will be challenging a walkout at the elections upcoming on August 9th for the post of senior vice president. He'll have a walkout next week on the show to share his thoughts on the way forward for football. And Curtis, that leads us nicely into our next segment as we look ahead to some of the issues facing the sport that I'm sure will have been mentioned by Barney that will be discussed as we lead into the elections on the 9th. I believe we also have Dexter Marshall with us. Good evening, Dexter.
I think Dexter is still setting up until we get his audio sorted. But yes, Paul, the way forward, I think we are in the process of getting structure sorted. I think that's one of the issues where we would have fell down, one of the avenues we would have fell down over the years, structure. Talent has never been a problem. I think we need structure and systems put in place. And this is true for all sport. We've seen it happen, even if you draw the parallels with cricket, where the talent is still there, but the game has become more systematic. So I think we need more structure. Progress is being made in that direction. Facility-wise, I don't think we can deny we are in better shape than we were years before. Ideally, I'd like some more dedicated football grounds where we don't have the hump in the middle for the cricket pitch. But you know that's a challenge. We know that's a challenge. When you put down the field, then the issue becomes what? Maintenance. And maintenance in Barbados is an issue for everyone. Any association, any capacity, maintenance is always a problem. So that would be a challenge. And for me, Paul, I think the big one is regional and global events. We need to start winning things. We speak glowingly of the past, and rightfully so. Barbados has had some wonderful players. But I think we're at the stage now where we need to back it up. We need to start winning things. We need to start qualifying for the Gold Cups. We need to go deeper into the World Cup runs. We've not had a good World Cup run and good Olympic run now for quite a while in terms of going, let's say, into the knockout stages, quarterfinal stages and whatnot. And I think that, as pointed out by the president, I believe it was last week, is where the focus should be. Advancing the quality now of our international football as we draw in players from around the world and whatnot. But for me, that is it. Moving forward, we have to start being known as a football heavyweight in terms of the region at first, and then perhaps the world.
We're going to continue that discussion. Dexter, I see you're there. You can unmute and you can join in the discussion as we go ahead. We expect also to be joined by Nick Maitland, who will be with us during the program. But yes, Curtis, you mentioned some of the key areas, some of which were also mentioned by Barney Callender. I think Dexter's there now. Good evening, Dexter.
Hi, good evening to you. Well, good evening to Curtis, my very good friend. How are you all doing, guys?
We're pretty good.
Pretty good, man. How have you been doing? Portugal, man. Well, as you can see, this is growing here. you can see Curtis is growing more here. And I have less.
Yes. It's amazing, Paul. We have Dexter on the line as well. Earlier today, I was going through some YouTube videos. As you know, some time on my hands. So what came up was a YouTube selection. Germany versus Brazil in the World Cup. That infamous game brought back the pain for me, Dexter, man. That was horrible.
Curtis, you're a sucker for Polish Rodo.
That was horrible, Dexter.
Very horrible, man. I think that I'm not getting over it.
But I'm not. I will never get over that. I need Germany. I'm supposed to put like 5 in Germany in the near future. But yeah, that was some bad times. The way forward though, Dexter, you've been there, done that, traveled extensively, trained extensively. If we gave you a magic wand, no, how would Dexter Merchant improve Barbadian football?
Well, first, we need to have a proper youth structure in terms of player development. That's one of the key things that I would look at. Straight across the board. We need to have dedicated football fields that strictly football. We need to have coaches who are well coached, who will not only just go from coaches just to get certified, but coaches that will go there, come back and implement what was being taught to them as those coaches. Then one thing that too is like you have to start learning. If we don't start learning now, then there'll be no future for our young players to want to aspire to anything. As you said before it came on, you hit some very key points. You know, we have had some very good players. And the best one we had was when the backup, Beckers, was the national coach. Since then, we haven't had a good run. And we have produced good players, quality players, but we cannot get over that hurdle. Since then, we haven't gotten over the hurdle. So we have to look at where we want to go, where we went wrong, and correct it now. Yes, we may have been lost a lot of years not doing it the right way, but I still think that the City BFA have done a tremendous job in educating coaches, and me, I am one of those. I've just completed my government license, and we need to get coaches that understand football, understand where we have to get the football together. It can't be me and you pulling here and me and you pulling there. We have to be on the one page. And for the future of football, it depends upon the quality of, like I said, the coaches and what the infrastructure embraces, you know. And I think that we can achieve it, but these things have to be implemented, maintained. We've got to be consistent. I find that in Barbados, we're not consistent. And you know, we just talk it, but when it actually comes to doing it, you know, you don't find that commitment as we would like. But that is some of what I would really work on in the meet. If I had that magic on, you know, I would love to see Barbados win the qualify for the World Cup. If we can't qualify for the World Cup, then we can't go anywhere else. If we can't qualify for the World Cup, okay, we qualify for the World Cup. So we need to we need to look at our infrastructure very carefully, very critically, and start to critique areas that we need. But they say what is not going to make sense and work with what is going to get our football in the future. We had some meetings here with the technical director. And he you know, when he leave Barbados, the football will be in us as coaches' hands. That's one thing he said about us. And we are actually now working on educating more coaches. And we hope that as we do it in these series that are coming up, that we will have more coaches that will help get football in the future.
Two quick questions for you, Dexter. I'm not sure how much of the Premier League you've been able to see of recent. I wanted to get your thoughts on the league in terms of the standard. And well, I know you're also intimately involved with the youth football and your thoughts on youth football also.
I watched one of the games on
Trident 10,
you know, and some of the games that I saw, you know, one thing that worries me a lot is that, you know, some of the things that are there in the coaching, because the coaching is at that level is not up to standard. You got teams that can't even get five good passes put together. You may got some things the quality things that can do it. But at that level, when we can't put five passes together, it's a problem. For me, it's a problem. You know, and our coaches at Premier League, they need to be trained, and they need to understand systems. They need to understand that, like, you know, because you might see a team playing a 3-5-2 system, you can say, "May want to play this system." But we have to have the players that can do those systems. Those systems require a lot of technical work, a lot of physical work, a lot of training, a lot of planning. And a lot of these coaches at Premier League, they are just coaching at random. And, you know, and they're not coaching with a plan. You know, you have to have a plan. Okay, for instance, I'm coaching a Premier League team, and when I go and watch that team before I take over, and I see that we are having problems right in the middle, then I would design a program that fix that middle at practice. And that is one thing that some of our Premier League players are lacking, and that knowledge of doing that. Until that we coaches and Barbie start doing that, then we will see our football start improve a lot. Some of the teams that I watch, they're playing patches. 1 minute is like up and down. So like the consistency is not there. And that's my worth on watching Premier League football. There's something that, you know, should even be Premier League.
Youth football.
Like I always tell people, and that's my philosophy, and I will stick to that. When I watch youth football, and when you see teams got, when you see young players get beat, they're quite a lot. That's quite bad. Maybe one, maybe should have win. That something is that I have a problem with. At my football academy is based upon long-term player development. And I always tell people in this country, you all can win all the youth championships in the world. If I could develop 20 good players that can be contracted overseas, then I know I have done more than any of you in Barbados that could have done. Then I know that I have given Barbados national team 20 professional football players that are technically, tactically, mentally solid. And that is what we start. We have to start doing right now. We have to start working on long-term player development. I find that the foundation of our youth players, they have some very good youth players out there. Don't get me wrong, they have some very good youth players out there. But when they're playing, you see that the foundation is crumbling under them. Very much so. I love youth football, and I think that's our future. And I think that I have did some work with the national team where they have 85 players, youth players, and an elite program. And I call it Spade to Spade. When I was invited to that program, I saw the kind of players that are there. I think that we need to start looking at friendship and give youngsters that have the quality and the ability to go up at those programs. And I don't like it. I believe if you merit to go there, then you can go there. But when you can come and put youngsters to call that, and that that's that boyfriend, that's a boyfriend, then you are defeating the purpose. And I am very serious about this. If you are going to do elite, you gotta got the elite players that in this country. Elite means the players that you don't have to be working, you don't have to be teaching to control a ball, to pass a football, to do this and to do that. We don't understand eliteness in this country, no, that kind of football. When you are elite, the players that I see are Barbados elite players now. You will never see them going at professional club. You will never see them kind of players and kind of quality. So my thing is that, like, because that I am Paul Mears and I am Curtis Saint friends, and Curtis Saint got a player, a son, and Paul got a son. For me, if you're not good enough, I can sell it from Paul, Curtis, your players need to know the development. It makes sense putting the elite program because it's too hard for good players. That's my take upon youth football.
Next thing you mentioned, the prospect of having players move on to the international scene. Do you believe it's a necessary step for local players? Can we reach that next level with homegrown players, or do we need players who would have either been based overseas and would have played in the professional or semi-professional system, or do we have the capacity at this stage to do it at home?
100%. We have it here. We have the players here that if they are put under the right training format and the right system of training, we can develop homegrown players here. Because we are just naturally talented. Yes, I agree 100%. We can do it. It can happen. Look, I signed a professional contract last year with a Brazilian professional club. I don't know if you saw it in the news. When the coach from that club was here in Barbados last a year today, this summer, there were 9-year-old player at my football academy, and he was doing some Brazilian drills, and this young boy was doing the drills exactly better than all the other players inside my academy. The coach said to me that, sir, how old is the youngster? I said, he's 9. He said, he is doing these things like he live in Brazil. And he said to me that, sir, when that youngster get 11 years old, when he get 11 years old, I want you to bring him to Brazil every time he's on vacation. From the senior club that Roberto Firmino came from. So we have the talent here, but they have to go through, I keep telling people, long-term player development. when you develop players the right way, then scouts look at that talent, how you master football. When you got the football, what do you do with it? When you don't have it, what will you do? And that youngster carry those qualities that touch that position. Then you on someone train too. So we can develop one player that can take football, take barbecue to work out. We have it, Curtis. We have it here now. But you've got to got people that are dedicated, that understand what to do, how to do it. And cut through all friendship and look at people that you know that, listen, this guy has the potential, let's run it. That's it.
I want to bring in Kenneth quickly. So I'm nodding earlier. Kenneth, it's similar to the African experience where you see the African Cup of Nations, you unearth a few stars every event, but you look at the World Cup events and you see players who would have dominated in the French League, would have dominated in the Premiership. At one point in time, a few seasons ago, if you didn't have an African winger in your Premier League team, you were no one. When January came around, Chelsea were in trouble because they had so many players of African descent going off to play the African Cup of Nations. From your standpoint, how do you see it? Homegrown versus Europe versus international quality?
Well, I mean, it's very, very important to have that homegrown content. Very, very important, because if you have no homegrown content, you have no team. Because it's from the homegrown content that you find the stars that you export internationally to improve and then bring back to play for you at a higher level. You know, without that homegrown content, there is no sort of a mid-tier for you to have, you know, players that can sort of serve the country when needed in terms of bringing in revenue for, you know, transfers and stuff. So if you look at quite a lot of African teams, if you look at quite a lot of the teams internationally, they depend on a lot of, even teams that are in Europe that have players that are African descent, they don't mind sending their players to go and play for African football teams that were not, you know, born in Africa, because they see the value of giving them that international experience. So, you know, for us, especially for Nigeria, that has really, really succeeded with, you know, ever since we started winning the Under-17 World Cup in 1985, I think, ever since, or 1993, with Kanu Nwankwo, we've just, you know, gone places. You know, we won in 85 and won in 93 with Kanu Nwankwo. And we've been going fine in the Olympics. And after we won it in 93, we won the Olympics, most famously beating Brazil and yes, Ronaldo's Argentina. So it's so important that you have that system churning out. Look at the USA now. The USA is pumping out so many stars to Germany. That homegrown content is so important. So it's important that we continue to have that base to be able to generate the stars that will come back and serve the country. It's not too big for Barbados to aspire to be in the World Cup. I don't think it's, you know, it's beyond us. Yesterday apart from football, yesterday I was listening to a song, a Shaggy song, and I found out that the guy that was singing with it was Barbadian. I was even born in Holtown, you know, the Angel. Never knew that, yeah. You never known that. Ray Vaughan. So it's important that we're able to, you know, generate such raw material to be able to develop our football locally.
I wholeheartedly agree, Paul. Final words?
Yeah, I'll toss it over to Nick, who's just joined us, Nick Maitland. Nick, any quick thoughts on the way forward for local football?
Yeah, I think, yes, good evening, gentlemen, good evening, listeners. In terms of our local football and charting a way forward, I think that, yes, Kenneth is absolutely correct. There's wanting to aspire to get to the World Cup for us as Barbadians is not too far-fetched. And rather, it should be a goal of ours to get to the World Cup or get to the final stages of one of our regional tournaments. But I think it starts with the professionalism of the sport. It starts with youngsters understanding that this can be a job. It's not just something you do, or you go to work and train on evenings, or you know, on weekends you play football. I'm not sure what Coach Dexter had touched on, but I'm sure that persons like himself have exposed footballers to such a high level of football that they must think that they can be professional footballers. And I think that's where it starts for all of us, the professionalism of the sport. And then maybe, you know, you don't have to necessarily be professional in Barbados. We We may not have a professional league in the Caribbean soon, but if you can think about it from that way and then go out into the world and play football and get make a living from it, come back to Barbados, you know, like if you were a carpenter, you would want to, you know, do some work for people in Miami. If you were you know, some sort of painter, some sort of artist, you would want to sell your work to people overseas so you can get more money, so you can raise your level, so to speak. So I think professionalism is the way forward for us. And it starts with having the great mentality or the big goal of getting to a World Cup, getting to a Gold Cup final, anything along those lines.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. Stay with us. Of course, we still have our international segment upcoming. I'm going to ask all of you to stay for that discussion. But I think, Curtis, it's time to skip across to Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, and we're talking about football and luck. I'm sure many of you gentlemen have been following what has been happening down there. But we have veteran journalist Fazir Mohammed, who's going to be joining us to bring us up to date on how that situation has been unfolding. So, say good evening to Fazir.
Well, really, it's a situation where almost nothing is happening as far as Trinidad and Tobago football, although the senior men's national team is in training under head coach Terry Fenwick. The situation basically because of COVID-19, there's obviously no international football to be played, no action taking place in that regard. But on the administrative side, at least some of the staff at the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association have been paid. They received the subvention from the world governing body FIFA via the normalization committee. However, not everyone was paid. Not all the coaches have been paid. Just one or two of the coaches have received the outstanding salaries, and that has left some of those coaches in a very unsure and unsteady situation. As far as the impasse between the normalization committee and the TTFA administration, that was removed by FIFA, and they were prepared to challenge it in court. That seems to be in a situation where they were thinking of going to arbitration, and then FIFA decided to pull out of the matter because it was publicized. So as far as that particular side of it, we're not exactly sure what is going to be happening next between the normalization committee and the administration previously headed by William Wallace.
Is the High Court still expected to hear the case?
Well, we're not exactly sure because about 2 weeks ago, well, in fact, 3 weeks ago, the lawyers for the TTFA executive headed by William Wallace, they went public with information suggesting that they were prepared to put aside the matter because FIFA were inclined to go towards arbitration. And that was seen to be a victory for the William Wallace administration because it was felt that FIFA, because obviously they have the resources to frustrate the matter in the courts, if they were inclined to go towards arbitration, this would suggest that the administration of William Wallace would have had some validity to their arguments that they should not be replaced by a normalization committee. But within a day of that matter becoming public, FIFA issued a statement saying that the arbitration was now off the table. The issue of mediation was off the table because it had been made public, which again raises a number of questions. If it is that you're going to go to mediation, why would it matter whether or not it was public? In fact, it should be okay to make it public that you are going to mediation or whatever issue that you have. As far as sorting out the process. So there's a lot of gray areas where this is concerned, and many people are basically saying that, look, it's another example of the power of FIFA that you really can't win if you seek to take them on. You might have a case that stands up in the local courts of Trinidad and Tobago, but internationally, you'll pay a heavy price in the end, and you might as well bow down and take whatever FIFA gives you.
Has this normalization committee headed by Mr. Haddad been given any reasons at all as to why the administrative staff has been paid and not the coaches?
No reasons given. And indeed, there are lots of questions being asked of Mr. Haddad as well as to whether or not he's really someone who's an honest broker. If there's the suggestions that he's had discussions with David John Williams, who was the previous head of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association before he lost that election on November 24th last year, and that he may be seen to be having some apparent bias in favor of the previous administration, and that would lend fuel to the fire
as to this being a conspiracy led by FIFA itself in trying to get rid of, discredit the William Wallace administration. Although the William Wallace administration really haven't held their cause with a number of revelations that came out over the last few weeks, which you can probably talk about as well. But as far as Mr. Haddad himself is concerned and the Normalization Committee, they really haven't had, as far as we're aware, the sorts of discussions with the staff at the TTFE that would have everybody comfortable in feeling that, look, they're fully aware of what is going on. They're fully committed to fully understand all that is going on in Trinidad and Tobago football. Even some coaches are saying, look, he's really not spoken to anyone to any great length to let them fully understand what is happening. So at the moment, there are many within the football fraternity who remain unclear as to exactly what are the credentials, one, and what is the intention of Mr. Haddad at the helm of this normalization committee.
You mentioned Mr. Wallace and those allegations. What has been the very latest ones against him? And secondly, I've been reading with respect to Coach Fenwick, some kind of development related to him and money. What's the situation there?
Well, let's deal with the second one first, when it comes to Terry Fenwick, because there are a lot of allegations, and we have to emphasize allegations of improper conduct as a football coach, as to favoring players who are either from his club where he was involved with a club, whether CL Financial, San Juan Jablete, or Central FC, and even now that the players who are working with him are required to sign certain agreements that would give him certain access to those players ahead of anyone else. There's also an association with another Englishman called Peter Miller, who's been bouncing around in Trinidad and Tobago football for the last 20 or so years. And whenever the issue comes up, it generally has to do with marketing and money. And that brings up the issue of William Wallace, because apparently William Wallace made arrangements and agreements with both Peter Miller and Terry Fenwick that were not ratified by the general executive of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association. He had initially denied it, but then it came to light that after the TTFA executive had agreed to a monthly salary of $17,500 for Terry Fenwick as men's national, senior national head coach, William Wallace bumped that number to $20,000. And it was only when that came to light that it created a really uncomfortable situation for Wallace. Someone who's always spoken out on the administration of the game at the executive level, Keith Lookloy, he expresses disappointment, his outrage at decisions being made at the executive level, and then Wallace going on to do things differently or adding on to the numbers, because from what we understand, Fenwick was insistent on improved terms from what was agreed to by the executive, and Wallace appeared to bow down to that. Also, there's the issue of the terms and the arrangements of having Peter Miller apparently as some sort of marketing representative. We're not too clear on the details, but what we know is that Peter Miller appears to be getting a significant sum of money for returns that we're not too clear of. We're not too sure exactly how it's going to be measured. And that takes us back to an issue that had developed just shortly after the new executive had come into office at the end of November last year, when a deal was signed with a new brand equipment supplier. And as it turned out, that arrangement really wasn't a sponsorship, because it required the TTFA to sell a certain number of uniforms before there was to be any sort of revenue earned by the Football Association. And as lawyers examined the arrangement, they said, look, this is not a sponsorship deal at all. This is basically the equipment supplier taking advantage of an arrangement that benefited them entirely, provided no real revenue for Trinidad and Tobago football, and questions are being asked as to how the William Wallace administration, and especially William Wallace himself, could have signed on to something like this. So it's a real credibility issue for William Wallace, because he did seem to have the moral high ground until about a month ago. And then when all these revelations started to come out, and he actually admitted subsequently in a lengthy interview with the website Wired868.com, which is edited by Lasana Liebert, who's well-known for his football reporting locally, regionally, and internationally, where basically he said that, look, he made decisions outside of the authority of the executive, and he owned up to those decisions. And indeed, it has raised questions as to whether or not he will have the support of the rest of his executive, even if they get back in office.
Yes, indeed, the voice of Fazir Mohamed. And every week, Paul, we go behind the scenes in Trinidad. Every week, I'm a bit more lost. It's frankly a mess. And I feel more so for the players who are in limbo. I think they perhaps are the only people that are not thankful, but relieved that we're under still some restrictions due to COVID, because they're not missing any international action. Because clearly, it's a bit of a mess in Trinidad. And, wow, as the details come out, I think a lot of people, Paul, have a lot of explaining to do for the current situation in Trinidad. Nevertheless, 2 minutes past the hour of 7, and we have another 13 minutes to get into the international end of this week's program. Well, gentlemen, we are pretty much done and dusted. Still to be played, the FA Cup final in England, we have some Champions League second leg. I believe this is round of 16, I believe this. Second leg, round of 16 games to be completed. Chelsea still there. PSG still there. Real Madrid still there. Man City still in. The big news today is that Kylian Mbappe will miss the first leg of the game against Atalanta. Got an ankle injury on Friday.
There is only one leg. You miss, you're out.
Yeah, right. Correct. He will... Right, quarterfinals. Yes. If they make it to the semis, he's okay. But bent off the pitch in tears on Friday, got his foot immediately put into a boot. I saw the injury on YouTube. Didn't look intentional, didn't look malicious. But I think he skipped out of the tackle, left the ball, but the player got off all of his ankle. And Mbappe now in doubt, PSG sweating a bit, because for all of their French dominance, Kenneth and Nick Dexter, they've not had much success at the European level, much like Manchester City, who set the world ablaze domestically. But at the Champions League level, where everyone wants to win the big trophy, it's that perhaps one of the hardest trophies in sport to win. For me, definitely the hardest in football, outside, of course, of the big one, the World Cup. PSG have not done that well, despite the huge sums of money invested. And Neymar and company must no doubt be sweating now, with Mbappe definitely missing the next game. And who knows how that ankle will hold up in the future.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen, once again. Before I go ahead, unlike what Manchester United did to Liverpool, they didn't send us any congratulations for winning the league. I'd like to congratulate all my Man United friends, Terry Howard, a Royal Barbados Police Officer, Terry Howard, and Tamara Reid, whom I hear is planning a parade for coming third. That has to be stopped. And of course, friends like Lekon, Guru, what do you call this gentleman now? Adetuyi. And Anderson Langdon. So, all congratulations to them for coming third on 66 points, the same amount of points that they achieved last season. So, I wonder what they're celebrating. But yes, it's going to be a very, very interesting August. Lots of injuries. Before we even go to the Champions League, Arsenal, my beloved other club, my friend Dr. Dapoy Godon is listening from Eau Claire, Wisconsin on the radio. And they are going into the FA Cup final. Of course, they didn't have a defense before, but now they're not going to be playing any defenders in the FA Cup final because most of their defenders are injured or suspended. But they have David Luiz, so there's hope. So quite a lot of injuries, and a lot of injuries in the Champions League as well. Atalanta is a fantastic attacking team, but they're not so good defensively. But with Mbappe out, if you look at Atlanta's midfield and attack, they are little. But they don't have any defenders that has the pace to stop Mbappe. With Mbappe out, believe me, that is, if it wasn't 50-50, if it was 70-30 before, I'm looking at it at about 54-46 at the moment now in favor of PSG. You know, perhaps Neymar and Co could unlock Atlanta, but Mbappe was really the kingpin, was really the man needed, you know, to sort of soak up pressure, for PSG to soak up pressure and hit Atlanta on the break. Because Atlanta, they come forward, they come all out attacking. I've sent you the results that Atlanta recorded this season. So many 7-0, so many 6 score goal lines. They are on about 90 goals so far in the season. So a lot of, it's going to be pretty dicey in that game. You know, you again, another problem for PSG, like Juventus, like Man City, when you're too busy beating teams so easily, I find it hard to believe that you'll be able to win the competition when you're told to come and step up in your game and really suffer to win the top competition in the world. Winning ugly. I find it hard that PSG has those fine margins to be able to win the Champions League. So I think they'll give us a great game, but I don't think they're going to go far.
I think this Champions League is going to be interesting because of all the subplots. Nick, the injury to Mbappe has set the scene now for Neymar to take the team by the scruff of the neck and deliver. Cavani is moving on, as we saw today. So the stage is set for Neymar. Stage is also was set for Barcelona and Messi, who've had a problematic season. Messi's unhappy. Pep Guardiola, by his standard, has failed. That said, second in the English Premiership, I believe he won another cup somewhere along the line. But by his lofty standards, he's not won the Premier League, the Champions League for a few seasons now. Didn't win it in Germany. Has not won it at Man City. He's going into his fifth year now. So he's under some pressure as well. Zinedine Zidane has provided the upset in Spain, winning the La Liga title, kicking Barcelona to it. And Zidane, I think he's underestimated as a coach, but he wins. If it's one thing that can be said about Zidane, you win stuff. At this stage, who would we say are the favorites for the Champions League?
Well, first, let me say thanks to Kenneth for all his thinly veiled sarcasm speaking about United.
It's congratulations, ever boy. Whoa.
And I've said congratulations to Liverpool more times than I would like to.
So, I didn't receive mine.
Well, congratulations, Kenneth.
Klopp is no manager of the year.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So well done to all the Liverpool guys.
And Nick, before you go any further, I must say, I forgot it at the top of the program, in all seriousness, though, given where they were in December, January, United have done extremely well to get the third on goal difference ahead of Chelsea. I think, though, when you look at the squad, there's no reason why they should have been underperforming as long as they have. It's like I was having a discussion with a Liverpool fan, Kenneth, and I told him, for a club that has been so great for so long, it really took a while to get over the hump, but now they've gotten over the hump and going well. Yes, Nick?
Yeah, superb. What I would say is United and Chelsea definitely, in my view, belonged in the Champions League. And speaking of the Champions League, it looks a little more open. When the first legs had been completed earlier this year, we had our different favorites and everything, but now it seems a little more even keeled. I think in my mind, Bayern Munich and Liverpool are the two clubs that stand out in my mind. I think can win the Champions League this year. I would not be surprised if Liverpool won 2 years in a row because, I mean, basically speaking, they're the best team in Europe. Speaking of PSG, I think this year will be another year where we throw up our hands in frustration and say, oh, they have all the money, they have all the talent, but they still weren't able to deliver the trophy. And I think that Mbappe injury is a major part of why they won't win the Champions League this year. Neymar, I don't think he can be trusted to put the team on his back and take them through to the next round because I think that he's, and this is just my opinion, I think he's more into himself. So the team around him needs to be a well-oiled machine functioning and then he can find himself in there and contribute to the success in his own way. So I don't think he will be the one to mastermind them going to the next round. In terms of Barcelona, Lionel Messi is definitely the player who can do that and who has done that in the past. I think he can take them past Napoli, but Napoli is never an easy team to come up against. It's never the team to say, oh, yeah, we can beat Napoli. Oh, yeah, Napoli can do this. No, Napoli is a well-oiled machine as well. Great, long-serving players as well. And they know how to get past teams in competition. So I would say Bayern Munich, Liverpool are my favorites. City are, they have a shot, but I think Real Madrid, with all the quality they have, they would want to, you know, enforce the fact that they are better than City, especially now that Zidane has won another league title and Pep has come second. I don't think Pep has ever come second in his career. He probably has. But, yeah, so Bayern and Liverpool, for me, favorites. Barcelona may give them a little bit of a chance against Napoli, and City a slight chance against Madrid. But I'm looking for that, those two clubs. And it's interesting because Klopp was linked with Bayern. And so it'd be nice to see Klopp come up against Bayern, probably in the final. And, you know, maybe beat Bayern again in a final. But I think that would be a great final. And those two, one of the two of those, I think is going to win the Champions League.
German football definitely in the spotlight now. It's become the supermarket for quality attacking players. A few seasons ago with Spain, Germany now is the destination of choice due to the price of some of the players as well. I'm not sure how you see it. Dexter, your tips on the Champions League.
Okay. First, let me congratulate my club, Liverpool. Huh?
Very well. Thank you very
best
much.
Best club in the world, man. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I thought this shirt was offhand. I didn't realize, Paul, you've been infiltrated by another one.
Yes.
Congrats. Well played, gentlemen. Well played.
After 30 years, we've done it. You know what I mean? Congratulate the Klopp and his team. No, I was just saying, just reading there about Mbappe with his injury out for 3 weeks. So he would miss this leg coming to Atlanta. Yes, Atlanta is a very good team, attacking team, you know, but, you know, people will start with Neymar, but I think Neymar has realized that it's not about him anymore. And if he get it right, and even though that Mbappe is not there, I'm not going to come out no team. I'm not going to come out Neymar. I'm not going to come out PSG, because PSG still got good defenders too. We can't be, you know what I mean? They have good defenders too. And all Neymar have to do is just play for the team. And who knows? I would have loved to see Mbappe in this game, but he's not there. So what's going to happen is that PSG has to step up to the plate. Neymar, I think he has to come to the game. And I believe that he's going to do it. You know, we've seen Neymar take things from his back for Brazil in the Olympics, and he's done it. So who say he can't come and do it over this game? You know, who say that Neymar can't come in and perform because and they go Atlanta. You know, so even though that he's out, I mean, you still have Real Madrid. You can't conquer Real Madrid. You know, they have dominated that European Cup for many years. You know, and Zinedine has been a winner. Yes, you still got Bayern there. It's, you still have the team, Barca is there, right?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to see football a long time. But the teams that are there, they are very good. As Curly said, this is going to be very interesting. It's going to be a very interesting last stage. And as my Nigerian, Brazilian, Liverpool friends have said, it's going to be... I can't even call it.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting.
It'll be very interesting. You know,
yes, indeed.
I can't come and say that this body can win until those games finish at 90 minutes. Then we could only predict, but I didn't. That football have to play for 90 minutes.
Indeed. Hopefully, by this time next week, we have a better idea of what is going to be happening. By then, we would have had the FA Cup, but we've come across the final whistle on today's program. The hour has really, really flown. This week, special thanks to all of our participating commentators. Dexter, nice to see you again, Nick and Kenneth. As usual, congrats to all of the Liverpool fans, the Man U fans, the Man City fans, the Chelsea fans, everyone making it into the top four. Commiserations to Leicester City. Better luck next year, Paul. Spurs. Mourinho. Still getting there. And of course, we'll be back next week. Same time, same station, as we take a look at the world of local, regional, and all in association with the BFA. This has been the Penalty Spot. Stay tuned to Voice of Barbados.